So we'll bash Cannonball again, everybody.
First,
this one's actually a YouTube video of Phil Mann playing Wabash Cannonball on his banjo as a train passes by.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the train's a little too loud.
Yeah.
Levels are off.
It's really cool if you watch the video, especially also, if you love this particular song.
And trains. But
sure.
The train whistle or the train going by, at first I thought it was people booing.
Could have been.
I'm sorry you turned yourself down right as I stopped. I didn't know you were going to do that.
Of course not, because you're a terrible radio host. All right, everybody. We're on the show here today. It's November 3rd, 2010, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. And Linda McMahon is not senator. She failed. And Richard Blumenthal won. Is anyone surprised?
No.
That was a rhetorical question, Vinny, but you're welcome to answer.
No. Nobody's surprised.
You're not surprised? You didn't think she was going to win?
Well, to be honest, the only coverage of the race I read on your site, and you seemed to indicate that she was looking bleak in the past week or two.
I didn't say she was looking bleak.
The race.
Her campaign was looking bleak. Till last night on Raw. We'll talk about that here in just a second. So, yeah, we're going to talk about Raw. We're going to talk about some more WWF primetime wrestling. And as fun as it's been to review primetime wrestling, it's done getting time to move on.
2 weeks is enough.
Yeah, well.
This was not a good show.
No. I think that in order to fully enjoy this stuff, I've got to watch like a week at a time and take an extended break and then go back. This was not the best primetime wrestling of all time. And there were no skits on a boat.
That's a major factor in it not being a good primetime wrestling.
Yeah.
No boat equals no buys.
But I will say that the show could have been much, much worse, but it was not nearly as bad because I was watching with the two new buggers.
Brian got cats, everybody.
Kittens.
Brian got kittens.
Yeah.
They are adorable.
Fucking cute. The show will never be the same now that I've got babies.
Let's go get them.
Bring them here? No. Yeah. They're way too wild.
One of them is. It's strange how animals, even when they're from the same litter, you think they're basically twins, they should act the same, but no. Because my girlfriend has cats that are brothers, and they're completely different, and your cats are sisters, and they're completely different. And one of them is insane and perhaps evil. One of your cats, this is no exaggeration, one of your cats, smaller than my fist, tried to eat me.
Yeah. It's something else.
Or she, I guess. She jumped in my lap, and I put my hand out to, you know, pet it, and it grabbed with both paws and bit into my finger as hard as it possibly could.
Which wasn't very hard.
Thankfully.
Let's be honest.
No, it didn't even hurt, but it caught me off guard. And then tried to move down my finger like it was corn on the cob.
They are miniature tigers. That's what cats are, everyone. But you didn't know that, did you?
Cat has fighting spirit.
These little buggers, they've got a little room that all of their stuff is in. And sometimes they go in there and sleep, and then they wake up and they come downstairs and they go batshit crazy. And I think it was because Whitney was gone all day today. Like every day since they've come home, she's been there. And she's a calming influence over these, I hate to say it, but these little fuckers. And she was gone all day today. And they came downstairs at 10 a.m. and they proceeded to grapple. And they would grapple in a very violent manner. And then they would run at top speed across the house to another area of the house where they would grapple. And then they would run at top speed to the other side of the house. And this repeated, I swear to God, for 4 hours. So
and
I
for
just...
For those of you wondering, yes, Brian does have hardwood floors.
So these
so
things...
this was great comedy.
Yeah, they one of them like took off running and slid and just kept sliding until it smashed into the wall. Which, of course, when they're little, is not a big deal. Oh, I didn't even tell you the best story. So, we take them home, and we set up their litter box and their food and such in a room upstairs. And no, we did not put these things close together. So, we wanted to have everything set up and then introduce them to this room first. So, when they started wandering around the house, they would know how to get back. So, we bring them upstairs. We put them in their little room. We shut the door. They explore the entire room as they are wont to do, and after about 15 minutes, they are acclimated, so to speak, and we decide we're going to open the door and let them free. So we let them free, and of course, they start running again. And they just run back and forth, and they run back and forth, and they run back and forth down this long hallway. Run back and forth, run back and forth. And then they run around the corner, and then they run back and forth around the corner again. And finally, they run around the corner, and we had all the doors open upstairs, which was a mistake. They should have all been closed so they could explore things one at a time. But they ended up in our bedroom, and they're underneath the bed, and then they're in the bathroom, and they're running around like idiots. And one of them tears out of the bedroom at top speed. And when you leave the bedroom, that's where the staircase begins. Mm-hmm. This fucking cat, at top speed, runs out of the bedroom, and suddenly there's no ground underneath it. It ran in midair like in a cartoon. Exactly like a cartoon. Exactly like a Roadrunner cartoon. It ran in midair for about 9 feet and then just stopped, looked down, there was no ground, and it just fell. All the way to the, it didn't fall like all the way down to the ground, but there's like, you know, the stairwell goes up halfway and then it turns to go up the other half. So really it fell half a story. But it got up and it looked around and it slowly walked back up the stairs and it slowed down from that point. And then of course, about 2 minutes later, its sister does the same stupid thing, tears out of the bedroom in midair, falls down half a story, shakes its head out, looks around, and slowly climbs up the stairs. They never did it again. So they're fast learners. But anyway, these cats are just completely wild. And then after they've run around for 4 straight hours grappling, then they just sit down and they go to sleep. And they are just perfect little buggers. They have not had any accidents. They have not destroyed anything. They've been great so far. So anyway, I'm excited to watch Impact with these buggers on my lap. I think it's going to really calm me. You know what I mean?
I guess we'll see.
That cat passed out on you.
The one cat climbed up.
Because you're like a mountain.
Yes, he scaled me.
Yes. Really.
And I was sitting in the chair, and he scaled up basically my chest and got on top of my shoulder and like in the against my neck.
Yeah.
And zonked.
It zonked out, and its arms were like hanging down Vinny's back.
I couldn't see this because it was, you know, on my neck.
Yes.
But I could tell, you know, I could see its tail end.
It was like if you threw a man over your shoulder.
And just hanging limp?
Yeah, like you're going to just carry him or something. I'm trying to think of what wrestling move would begin like this. They're really, I guess if you lifted a man up for, I don't know. Anyway, if you threw the man over your back, this was the position this cat was in, dead. Mm-hmm. Dead asleep on Vinny. So
I am soft and warm.
You are big, and you're like a... you know, like a mound of fat. I can think of anything, so that came out. So yeah, anyway, that's the story of the two little kittens. They're 3 months old. They may, in fact, have been born the day we got married, actually. We did the math. So these little buggers were meant to be in this house, and hopefully they will continue to be good, and I don't have to come on this show and ever talk about them in a disparaging manner like I've not had to do today. All right, let's start with Raw here. And what did you think of the skit?
The Vince McMahon skit?
No, the skit with Lita.
You mean talking about Pee Wee Herman? What did I think of the skit?
I know you like the Pee Wee Herman skit.
I love the Pee Wee Herman skit.
Of course you did.
Yeah. Well, I should clarify. I love the in-ring Pee Wee Herman skit.
The backstage one did suck.
The backstage one sucked. The in-ring was awesome. I didn't know what to make of the Vince McMahon skit. Except it was just Vince McMahon venting, and we were basically forced to sit there and watch. And it's been worse when he's vented before, but this had nothing to do with entertaining an audience. Had to do with Vince McMahon getting stuff off his chest. The only real substantial thing I noted was at the end when it's revealed that the entire skit was just Stephanie's dream, and then Hunter tells her that Vince McMahon is brain dead. Hunter never actually appeared in the skit. We only heard his voice. But at the tone of his voice, or even really before that, when people realized it was Stephanie and she was having a dream in bed, therefore her husband must be nearby, they got very excited.
Mm-hmm.
He is still a big star.
Well, it was, if you've not read the cover story of the Figure Four this week, we did a very detailed analysis of pay-per-view business for WWE in the last 3 years. And there are, in fact, two men who And granted, this is not a perfect system because there are a lot of factors that go into this. But per this system, which is the best that we can do, there were two men who noticeably made a... They noticeably moved numbers. And more so than, for example, the WWE brand is what sells. Or, you know, WrestleMania sells. The two men who made a big difference in the numbers were Jeff Hardy, which is no surprise, and Triple H. When Triple H headlines a pay-per-view, people buy those shows. I can't remember the exact numbers. It was like an average of 15,000 extra buys for pay-per-views that Triple H is headlining. So, say what you will about the guy, but he is, in fact, a draw. So, there you go. I didn't see this as Vince venting. I've had another day to think about this. This was a funeral where they don't call it a funeral. They call it a celebration of life. I think that about 3 weeks ago, Vince lost his mind. He flipped his lid. He went nuts. This is when he realized, fuck, we are legit going to lose this race, and I'm out $50 million. And I think that he did a lot of crazy things, and he wrote a lot of crazy letters, and he said a lot of goofy things, and he went through the period of mourning. And now he's at acceptance. He was at acceptance before the election even took place. That's what this skit to me was. This was Vince going, you know what? Fuck it. What the fuck can I do about it? Nothing. I may as well make light of the situation. That's to me what it was. When Vince is angry and he's venting, usually it's a little more overt and it's mean-spirited.
It's more uncomfortable.
And it usually does not involve him. Sometimes it involves other people. This was Vince poking fun at himself and the enormous waste of money that was his wife's Senate campaign. So that's what I saw this as. And it was rare, funny WWE comedy. So way to go.
He did have the Blumenthal sticker on his ass.
Yeah.
That's a little mean-spirited.
Well.
He has been worse.
It could have been over his cock.
Maybe it was. He had a gown on.
That's true. So, yeah, that was that segment. And then, obviously, you're in the perfect demographic to think the Pee Wee Herman skit was awesome.
The correct demographic.
Oh, really?
Yes. There's
Listen.
No possible viable alternative opinion.
I didn't hate the Pee Wee Herman skit. But Pee-wee Herman's Big Adventure was a pretty damn great movie, I won't lie. Pee-wee's Playhouse, in a lot of ways, I know that people look back, I know there's nostalgia and that sort of thing, but if you were forced to watch that fucking TV show every week, you would commit crimes, okay? That was a fucking annoying television show in a lot of ways. So, yes, they recreated it here in 2010.
Yes.
Yes, it was a funny flashback to back in the day. Still, it was fucking annoying. The screaming and shit like that, and the gong, because they said ring.
Ah!
Just retarded.
You knew I was going to do that.
I knew you were going to do that. I should have turned you down in advance. But
this didn't actually scream.
I did not think that this was one of the worst guest hosts of all time, by any stretch of the imagination. Pee-wee was totally fine. Per guest host standards, it was fine. I did not think that this was, like, so fucking great or anything like that. And I did grow up in that generation. But again, Pee-wee's Playhouse was designed to be fucking annoying. So,
yes.
I'm just trying to think of an example. Like, so let's say that in 15 years, there's a WWE flashback show, and Lay Cool comes out and does their exact same shtick as they do today, 15 mm-hmm. years older. People would probably go, wow, they did a great job. It's still fucking annoying. So that's my thoughts on Pee-wee's Big Adventure here on Raw.
I thought Pee-wee, first of all, I was stunned. I don't think the man has aged since Pee-wee's Big Adventure came out.
He did look remarkably the same.
It was astounding.
He did have the beginnings of jowls, I noticed.
He did, and maybe it's a little bit of bags under the eyes, but...
Oh, I have those.
It's been 20 years, 25 years
traveling.
Or more. Yeah, so...
Cats.
He's holding up. He's doing great. They did the skit backstage with Mark Henry and the Divas Twister, and it was lame. And then Lita was there for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they had Lita there. Perhaps she will do a confrontation with Lay Cool or something.
Well, she'll be back, I'm sure.
I guess.
This was just a return.
Is she friends with Pee-wee?
A poor one at that. Well, actually, she was a gigantic Pee-wee Herman fan.
So,
Pee-wee's Big Adventure was her favorite movie of all time. Now, hold on, everybody, and think about that. Okay? Movie was good, but seriously. What kind of person are you that Pee-wee's Big Adventure is your favorite movie of all time?
The kind of person who dates Matt Hardy for years.
Yep, there's your answer.
All right. So, yeah. And then the little aside. I was just confounded. It was spoiled to me that Lita was going to be there.
You were confounded.
I was confounded by that Lita showed up here. Pee-wee said, Lita is here. She came on camera smiling. The camera cut away, and she was never seen again.
Of course not.
That's the part that confounded me.
She'll be back at the flashback Raw.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on this program?
Oh, the other thing about Pee-wee is that he came on a segment or two after Santino was out. Boy, did he make Santino look lame. This is how comedy is done, everyone. Pee-wee Herman does it right. Santino does it wrong.
Well, Santino had some funny lines. He didn't know how to spell Sheamus.
I did think it was. I don't know if this is the way they planned it. I'm sure this is not the way they planned it, but Santino came off doing the gimmick of the allegedly funny guy hiding behind his big, scary monster friend.
Mm-hmm.
Pee-wee Herman did the same thing with the Big Show, except Pee-wee was way more likable and funny.
He had a bigger friend.
That may be part of it.
Big Show is a funny man.
He is.
Kozlov is unintentionally funny, especially when he wrestles.
And he said, I will crush you. That was funny.
Yeah.
Should we recap the show, or?
I asked if there were any other notes you had. I thought that would...
I have pages and pages of notes.
...compel you to speak.
There was a commercial on the show.
I can talk more about my kittens.
Go for it.
All right, let me tell you something about having cats, everyone. Especially if you haven't had any animals in many, many years. There are now two baby kittens in this house, and I have become a pathetic man.
Become?
I don't like to leave the house. Obviously, I have never been a father, and I'm sure it's going to be worse when I actually have real children, but when I'm, like, trying to go to sleep at night, and one of them meows in a plaintive manner, I can bolt straight up in my bed, like, holy fuck, what's going on? What's wrong with this poor kitten? It's bad times. I leave to go to the gym, and I want to just hurry so I can come back home to them. Hopefully this will pass, because right now it's severely impacting my sleeping habits and my life in general.
You're doomed.
Yeah. If I have two girls, like actual human being girls, then sight's done.
I was going to say.
So you guys better all roll the dice.
Real job, yes.
And not roll the dice, but you better all cross your fingers that I have two hellion boys that can bring rage back into my life.
You once told me you wanted a son named Fauntleroy.
Well, I'm rethinking that name.
That's a pity.
After reading about the TNA bullying campaign, I don't need that for young Fauntleroy. Going to school in his sailor outfit? I just picture trouble.
You don't say. You know? It took TNA to educate you to this.
Well, there's also my idea of I start training him in the womb to do jiu-jitsu and bring someone in to train him in his stand-up as well and his wrestling. And then name him Fauntleroy and dress him up as a sailor. Hmm. And then when he goes to school and the other preschoolers bully him for his goofy name, he chokes the shit out of him. That's my other idea. So I guess we'll see what happens.
Now I'm praying you. I'm just praying is all I'll say.
And everyone should do a lot of praying after this kitten episode. All right, go ahead.
There was a commercial on the show. It was for SmackDown, but it was promoting the Alberto Del Rio versus Edge match. And I don't know why, but this... Well, I kind of know why. This commercial was awesome, is the point. It was just a video of Alberto being himself and the narrator talking about how he was so excellent. He was a superstar, and they showed him talking about how great he was and smiling and being all happy. And then Edge's music interrupted, and it showed Edge spearing him from the three-way, and then they're having their match on Friday. It was just... I could not wait to see this match when this is over. And it was just for...
That's because it involves Alberto Del Rio.
That is a big part of it.
Every match he has with the main eventer is new.
Yeah. That is true.
They cannot help it.
That is an excellent point.
Yeah.
It did make you think, you are wasting this match on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pay-per-view match right there.
No, it's not.
It is for me.
It's 2010. Come on. There's no such thing as a pay-per-view match anymore. Unless it's Randy Orton versus John Cena.
Right.
This will be the 13th time, according to our statistics. Fuck. Next.
The hell is it? Santino and Sheamus had a mean guy match. And then Sheamus won. He went after Santino. Here's where Santino tried to buy his freedom with a sort of bribes. I did like he had a pocket full of candy. But So Seamus was going to kill him when Morrison made the save. So when the segment ended, you had Seamus on the ground, Santino celebrating, Morrison looking down at Seamus, Kozlov in the ring, apparently still dead. I tried to figure out, where on earth is this going? Are Seamus and Morrison going to feud? And if so, why did Seamus lose to Santino?
Well, I'm
sure... Are Santino and Morrison going to be a stable?
Here's the deal with Seamus, everybody. Seamus is not in the doghouse. I know the people have asked about this. Wade Barrett apparently has taken Seamus's spot as the chosen one for the time being. I don't know why. I don't know if Wade Barrett, in fact, is Triple H's new spotter. That could very well be. They are not mad at Seamus, but for the foreseeable future, it's going to be Orton, Cena, and Wade Barrett as the big triumvirate at the top. And Seamus will, in fact, be feuding with Santino and, I guess, John Morrison as well. So that's all I know about that.
We had the segment where basically Truth, even though he is John Cena's friend, is telling Orton that Cena can't be trusted. I'm hoping and praying this leads to a Truth heel turn.
It may.
I'm skeptical, but I hope it does.
Well, it's either him or Cena.
Yeah, well, you put it that way. But that would be awesome. And he's got the new song. It's not getting over. They don't want to go back to the old one, I assume, just because it was stale. So yes, turn him heel. It would be great. Ezekiel Jackson squashed Zack Ryder. Sucks to be in your hometown. We had a segment where celebrities talked about how cool wrestling is. Thank God the election's done, for many reasons.
Oh, let me talk about the election. I just got to say one thing very quickly, because I keep getting email after email after email about this. People seem to think that now that Linda has lost, it's time to... Well, it may be time, but they think that the only reason WWE is PG is because Linda is running for Senate.
I see.
Now, listen. Obviously, there's, you know, regardless of everything else, they were going to tame the product somewhat because she was running for Senate. But the main reason, the number one reason that WWE is PG right now is the deal with Mattel. And Linda McMahon, not becoming senator, has absolutely not one single solitary thing to do with the Mattel deal. The Mattel deal did not expire yesterday when she did not win. The Mattel deal is still in effect. The Mattel deal is doing quite well for them. So, for anybody that thinks that now that she has lost, thank God, we can go back to rated R,
blood
WWE,
and boobs everywhere.
Blood, boobs, and tits. No, it's not going to happen. So, get that out of your mind. This PG thing had very little to do. I won't say it had nothing to do with it, because they like I said, they would have toned things down somewhat for her running for Senate. But the number one reason that they are PG right now is because of Mattel, and that ain't changing. So I just wanted to get that out there so people will stop emailing me and saying, thank God, she lost. All right, what's next?
As usual, Daniel Bryan had the best match on the show, although on this particular show, that's not high praise. But he had a good match with Teddy DiBiase. He won clean. And afterwards, DiBiase declared to Maurice that his head was screwed up because he lost his million-dollar title. Therefore, he must crash NXT and break up the wedding. I was mildly curious. I did not watch NXT, and I don't intend to, but hey, they tried.
I didn't watch it either, but I did get a text from Ed that just read, best wedding ever. I actually have no idea what happened.
Now I'm curious.
Maybe I'll have to go to our own website and read the report here, so... Why don't you get cracking on this and wrap it up sometime in the next 3 days, and then I'll tell everybody what happened on NXT.
Natalya beat Michelle to win a title shot. They cool bonked into each other a lot. That was about that. Then they did the skit. Then we got the main event, which was Randy Orton and Truth versus Wade Barrett and David Otunga with Cena as ref. David Otunga is not ready to be in a main event. That was abundantly clear here. Everything else was fine. John Cena was actually a hell of a referee in that he enforced the rules and he was an authority figure, but he was so adamant about opposing the rules that he could be manipulated. The heel tactics worked well on him when they came in to do blind tags and stuff because he was so adamant about enforcing the rules on the other side of the ring. So the end of it was he was enforcing the rules for both teams. He was dealing with Wade in the corner. Randy came in illegally and hit an RKO on Otunga, and the Truth pinned him. It was fine. It really did not feel like a Raw main event at all.
Let me read this report. Somebody made mention to me that NXT is like perhaps the best show in WWE in the sense that for all the talk of the WWE universe, NXT is in a parallel WWE universe that operates by completely different rules. It is completely unlike any other show, and thus there's some things on it that are really quite great. Up next is a wedding, it says here. Dusty and Cody came out first to stand as groomsmen. Hornswoggle comes out as the ring bearer. At least Hornswoggle and Goldust have a history together. Goldust enters to his ring entrance theme in a snazzy suit carrying the $1 million title. Oksana was next, and wow, she looked amazing in a short gold dress. I should give credit to the person who wrote this, by the way. This is Emerson Whitner. Emerson has actually called the show several times. Josh Matthews, who claimed the preacher was Al Wilson, informed Michael that this He informed Michael that this was not a real wedding and it was only a storyline.
I see.
Just when I thought the show couldn't get any better, the preacher asked if anyone objects to them marrying. Instead of hearing, "I come from money," we get the preacher objecting to the wedding. Yes, the preacher has sold out to Ted DiBiase. Ted comes out and tells Goldust the only way he will let the wedding go on is if Goldust hands back the $1 million title. Oksana refuses to let him, so Ted brings out Agent Dickopopoulos to get Oksana. Before that could happen, though, Dusty takes the mic and says he had a feeling something like this was going to happen. He searched high and low to find a new minister. I was personally expecting Slick for some reason, but instead he brings out the $1 million man, Ted DiBiase.
Oh, yeah.
Ted Sr. informs his son that the reason he did this was just so he could see the look on his son's face. Ted Sr. is an ordained minister, a fact that Michael Cole makes mention of. Ted weds them, tells Goldust he may now kiss his bride. Before he could do so, Dusty swoops in and kisses Oksana. Oksana then slaps Goldust, turns heel, and walks away. What? Guess that's the end of the wedding.
So now he is married to a shrewd, cold, heartless bitch.
Yeah.
Fun!
Well, there you go. And we come back and find out that Maxine, of all people, has been eliminated. Well, I knew that was going to happen. I'm actually surprised she lasted this long. So that's your NXT report, everybody. Apparently, Oksana is, in fact, a gold digger. So maybe they can trot out the Iron Sheik at the flashback show, and he can accuse her of being a gold digger. And speaking of gold diggers, what a perfect song to play right now.
She take my medicine. Well, I'm in need. Yes, it's a trifling
mountain of fat.
Indeed. Oh, she's a
gold digger.
Well,
500 pounds.
That digs on me.
Sheik.
I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no
rich
niggas. Now I ain't saying she a
lesbian,
but she ain't messing with no
10-inch cock.
Get down, girl, gon' head. Get
down,
get down, girl, gon' head.
To the back, get down,
get down, girl, gon' head.
Get down, to the back,
gon' head. We all went to den, and then I had to pay. If you fucking with
Rosie O'Donnell,
then you better be paid. You know why? Take
$2.
Touch her. From what I heard, she got a baby by Buster.
Rambler
said she used to fuck with
Vinny Victor.
I don't care what none of y'all say. I still
make you humble.
David Hoffhoffy.
Winner.
Should have known, everybody. Should have known. Speaking of Brian Blair, he was not on the show we watched tonight. How's that for a segue? Primetime
it
Wrestling,
works.
November 29, 1998. That's because I am also a professional. Primetime Wrestling, November 29, 1998.
In 1988.
Holy fuck, what a long time ago. I was 13.
Yeah.
13 years old when this show aired. And it is something else looking back. It is something else looking back. Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby were arguing about what happened with the boat last week. We didn't see the end of the show, but shockingly, it ended in disaster.
Apparently, Heenan stuck Gorilla up for the bill.
Confounded I am by that news. Dino Bravo against Stefan De Leon and Jim Gorman in a handicap match. Again, the first match I vividly remember involved Dino Bravo, and somehow I'm still doing this job today. God bless the man, he has passed on in a gangland-style shooting, in fact. But he was not the best professional wrestler I've ever seen. In fact, he was quite bad. He did a bunch of moves, which did not look all that good, and then he pinned both men by giving them side slams.
That was his finisher.
I had forgotten that was his finisher.
Side slam.
That's his fucking finisher. Wow. So, yeah.
The
one match, no buys.
One match, no buys. They billed him as Canada's strongest man, which...
We know those Canadians. That's
sure,
no
he was
surprise.
A very strong man, but...
Ah, Lance.
When you...
it's a joke for him.
I see. But when you hear Mark Henry, World's Strongest Man, and Mark Henry comes out, you look at him and you think, yes, that's the World's Strongest Man. When Dino Bravo came out, you thought, eh, he's big. I don't buy
it. No, I saw him and I believed he could bench press a truck.
All right.
He's a short guy, short arms, huge chest. I'll bet that fucker could bench legit.
I'm sure he benched a ton.
I know he benched a ton, actually.
I don't know if he's squat a ton.
Well, short legs.
There you go.
I bet this man was a powerhouse.
Perhaps I'm dumb.
Well, that's obvious.
Well, not be the first time.
Gorilla told Bobby that if he didn't pay back all the cash that he'd blown on the boat episode, Kay from the USA Network had agreed to garnish Bobby's wages. Hmm.
The best part about this is it was all ad-libbed. Or at least Gorilla may have known he was going to reference Kay and garnish Bobby's wages. Bobby had no idea this was coming. So he just reacted.
I wonder if that was Kevin Kay. Pretty sure Kevin Kay works. Maybe that's Spike. I may have confused my Kays. Or maybe it was just some woman named Kay from 20 years ago.
That's most likely.
It probably wasn't Kevin Kay. Anyway, God, that wasn't almost 30 years ago. It was almost 25 years ago. That's terrifying. So then we add Gorilla Monsoon saying, and I fucking quote, as usual, tag team wrestling, hot and heavy, here in the World Wrestling Federation. Yeah.
That was the standard back in the day.
Tag team wrestling, hot and heavy.
There were
a lot of tag teams.
It was funny on the show because parts of it were referencing things that had happened at Survivor Series, and later there were matches that were plugging the Survivor Series.
Yeah, it was previous Survivor Series they were talking about.
Because they talked about how Mr. Fuji had left Demolition for the Powers of Pain. That happened at the Survivor Series, and by the way, it was funny because Demolition was champions at the time. So he fired the champs, basically. But then, in one of the matches, I forget which one, the announcers were talking, and they were just talking about how this Thursday, there will be this match going on. So, that's what happens when you tape stuff and then show it weeks later. But the point I was going to make was, at the Survivor Series that year, they did a match it was a tag team Survivor Series match with five tag teams per side.
Yeah.
They found 10 functioning tag teams at the same time and put them in one match.
Yeah. Not makeshift either.
No. They were all teams like the Rockers or Demolition or the Powers of Pain or the Killer Bees or what have you.
Mr. Fuji did a promo for the Powers of Pain. Mr. Fuji was talking for people.
It is a mystery.
What does that tell you about the promo skills of the Powers of Pain?
Well, it tells you that Warlord was big.
Then we had a Demolition promo where they vowed to remain champions after this feud was over. Gorilla actually said that Fuji probably had something to do with Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
Pro wrestling in the 80s, everybody.
Yes.
Next we had Coco Beware versus Steve Lombardi. And in building up this match, they talked about the wrestling album. And Bobby said his favorite song was Stand Up by Vince McMahon. And Gorilla said, really? And Bobby said, yes, it proves a man without a voice can sing a song. And Gorilla said, I'm writing that down. Kayfabe, everyone.
There were a few brilliant, subtle lines here. Such as during the next match, which was Steve Lombardi versus Coco Beware, Gorilla mentioned that Lombardi had attended the Terry Garvin School of Self-Defense, and this meant he was, what did he say? Untrustworthy? Shady. Yeah. A little shady in my book, he said.
Garvin was a central figure in the sex scandals that rocked the company in the early 90s, and this was 1988. So there were a number of Terry Garvin jokes on this show, and it was amazing. It was amazing in hindsight watching these programs. I guess someday people are going to look back in 20 years and watch WWE 24/7 from the early 2000s and hear people praising Chris Benoit and thinking, boy, that's fucked up. It's just the way history works, everybody. So they had a match. It was horrific. And by the way, Coco and Lombardi was horrific. And Mostly Lombardi's offense.
He was very terrible.
Well, I'd work him.
Sure, he wouldn't hurt you.
That's part of the problem. He looked like the lightest wrestler in the world, and by looking like, I mean, he missed by miles every time he attempted a move.
He could have done this match with your three-month-old kittens, and they would have been fine.
It's different. It's one thing when you are working fast and you miss. When you're working in slow motion and you miss.
True. He was both soft. He was light and slow.
They did a horrendously mistimed finish, which ended with Coco hitting a top rope drop kick for the pin. We often talk about how people were such great workers back in the day and that nobody nowadays could work like these people. This was an exception. This would have been the worst match on WWE television in at least a full year if it aired on WWE Today.
The highlight to me was there was a point where Lombardi went on offense for what seemed like 6 straight minutes of just bad stomps and elbows and clotheslines, and he applied a nerve pinch. And he is sitting there, Coco's sitting there, and Lombardi is standing over him, squeezing his trapezius muscles, and he shouts, "Ring the bell!" Thinking perhaps Coco would submit to his nerve pinch. It made me laugh.
Sean Mooney did the event center, and God bless the guy, but Tito Santana cut a horrendous promo.
He messed up like his third word, and they didn't bother to retape it. But the point of this promo was, basically he cut a promo on every heel in the company. Talked about guys like the One Man Gang, and I believe he said the man, the big boss man, and a few others. Bad News Brown was in there. He called them lowlifes. Said they didn't want to just have good wrestling matches for the people. They had to try and cheat, and so he was going to get them. He spoke Spanish and then said arriba. Mm-hmm. Then things turned around significantly. We got a fabulous Rougeau's promo.
They were fabulous.
Oh, this is great. This is when they had Jimmy Hart as the manager. They were the All-American boys, constantly waving these little pissant American flags. They made fun of the Hart Foundation, said, "Jimmy has told us all of your weaknesses and what little strengths you have." They said the Harts had lost every match since Jimmy Hart had left them, and then the Rougeaus were going to beat them too. This is awesome. And speaking of awesome, you skipped over something here.
Heenan and the Onion.
Bobby Heenan held up a college newspaper with the headline, "Heenan for President." And yes, it was The Onion.
Yeah.
In 1988. Mm-hmm. From, I believe you said, a Madison college. That was awesome.
We had Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig, that's how he was billed, as facing Jumpin' Jim Brunzel. Jumpin' Jim was wearing these knee-length tie-dyed monstrosities. Mr. Perfect was wearing short trunks. The kittens were fascinated by this match. They watched the match intently. I don't know why this match. It must have been the tie-dyed monstrosities, to be honest with you.
There were a lot of colors going on.
So Brunzel worked him over for a long-ass time.
This match sucked.
It was basically just, they did a bunch of moves back and forth, and then Perfect pinned him with a power slam.
You're giving it too much credit even for that. There was a long... First of all, they didn't do anything for... They stalled forever. Then there was a brief flurry of action, and then Brunzel got knocked to the floor, and he stood there staring at Hennig, and Hennig stared back. Seconds went by. Brunzel climbed on the apron. Hennig hit him, so he went back to the floor. They stared at each other for a while. This went on for a long-ass time. Then it slowed down. This is like the worst Kurt hitting match I ever saw.
It was not great.
It was imperfect.
Ken Patera faced Bad News Brown. This was the 1988 version of Kozlov versus Sheamus, just about 5 times as long. It was an interesting line when Heenan talked about how the average weight of a wrestler had gone from 260 pounds 20 years ago to around 310 in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
You don't fucking say.
Yeah.
What a stat. So Bad News won with the Ghetto Blaster, and they cut back to Gorilla at the desk, and he says, "I'm surprised Ken Patera went down that easily. Maybe he should retire."
Talk about sending a message.
What a fucking burial that was.
He should retire. And remember, everyone, Gorilla was the babyface. This is not Michael Cole where he likes some guys and sometimes he's a company man. Gorilla Monsoon was the babyface announcer, and he told Ken Patera to retire.
Heenan, who was supposed to be the heel, he was the voice of reason. And he was like, "Maybe Bad News is just that good." And to which Gorilla just shot him down.
No, Gorilla would not take part of that. There's another great line in this, by the way, when...
This was not the best of Gorilla, by the way. It gets better in the main event.
But there was... In the Patera Bad News fight, the referee was Joey Morella, who had... He refed the Andre Hogan match at WrestleMania 3, and part of that match was that Andre got a very close near fall where it seemed as the ref's hand actually did touch a third time. So Heenan starts going off about what a horrible ref Morella is and says, none of this would be a problem if his parents had taught him to count to three. For those of you who don't know, his dad was, in fact, Gorilla Monsoon.
Yeah.
I laughed.
We had a live interview with the original Ted DiBiase. It is amazing this man's son is the same Ted DiBiase that's in WWE today.
Yeah, what happened?
Ted Sr. is oozing charisma. This is an example of, God bless Ted Jr., but sometimes...
It skipped a generation.
No? Well, that's a way to look at it, too. But sometimes one man in the family gets all the charisma. Super Porky is the perfect example.
Well, it's been that way.
There are Brazos everywhere.
Most families in wrestling, it seems that way.
Well, no, there are some here and there, but...
And the exception is the Briscoes.
Sure.
The ROH version, but...
Although, to be honest, their dad may have gotten all the charisma.
No.
such a degree.
He may have the most charisma, but...
That's true.
I've seen too many great Briscoes promos, but, you know, Randy Savage got 100% of the Poffo charisma. Eddie Guerrero got 100% of the Guerrero charisma.
Well, Chavo's got a little bit.
Chavo Sr., maybe.
Let's move on. We had, what do we have? Oh, yeah, the Rockers and the Conquistadors. There was nothing else I wanted to say about the Ted deal, except that he was great. So the Conquistadors were billed as from somewhere in Latin America. The Rockers were, of course, a great babyface tag team. There's a news flash for everybody. We got another Terry Garvin reference. So... Then we had a great Gorilla moment. For those of you that always get upset when Dave buries Gorilla Monsoon, you really got to go back and watch a lot of this old primetime. Because Gorilla really, in a lot of ways, was horrible. For example, in this match, well, I mean, we had the obvious, you know, we were talking about earlier with the Patera deal, where he said Patera should just retire, buried him. So they're doing this match with the Rockers and the Conquistadors. And the babyfaces run wild for a while. Marty hits the ropes, and one of the Conquistadors trips him up. The Conquistadors go to work. They beat the fuck out of Marty Jannetty. They throw him from pillar to post. His partner is desperately trying to make the tag to save his partner's life, but to no avail. The Conquistadors kick him, and they stomp him, and they slam him, and they do move after move. And suddenly they cut back to Gorilla and Bobby in studio. And Gorilla announces, we've got to go to a break. We'll be back with the conclusion of this match. Now, before he says that, they cut from Marty taking the ass-whipping of a lifetime. And Gorilla says, Bobby, you predicted the Conquistadors in this match. And they're not looking all that great right now. And I thought, did I mishear him or something?
No.
So then they go to commercial and they come back. And Gorilla says, we're back. We're going to go back to action. The Conquistadors still trying to solve the riddle of the Rockers. And they cut back and they immediately cut back to Marty Jannetty being launched into orbit on a backdrop, crashing and burning, and having his ass handed to him for another 5 minutes.
Yeah.
What fucking show was Gorilla Monsoon watching?
The answer is, Gorilla did not watch this match.
He did not give a fuck
Gorilla
about
knew,
this television show.
Gorilla had a time cue when he was going to throw it to the match, and before the break when the match was going to be thrown to him, I guess you
he
would say.
He did not know that they most likely would go to a break while the Conquistadors had the heat.
He did not care.
He thought they might go to break during the shine at the beginning of the match, perhaps during the comeback.
He was well, they do that now.
They did not do that in 1988.
Not the comeback. No, Gorilla did not, yeah, I'm sure Gorilla went to his grave never watching this match.
They also had a great Gorilla-ism when Marty took a right arm clothesline and Gorilla called it, and I quote, a right hand job.
Yes. This is not how I would have worded anything.
Shockingly, there was no Terry Garvin reference immediately afterwards.
Ooh.
Sean got the hot tag, ran wild, place went nuts, broke down into a four-way. The Rockers tried to double-team. The Conquistadors tripped up Marty. They tried to double-team Sean, but Marty tripped up one of the Conquistadors. which, of course, the Conquistador had tripped up Marty earlier in the match. Poetic justice here.
Indeed.
And then Sean did a running crossbody for the pin. The place went nuts. This was a great, great match.
It really was.
To finish off this report here.
Yeah.
This is where I finished. Vinny, however, watched a little bit more.
I did. I stopped taking notes.
You don't remember what was right after this? Think.
I have completely blocked it out of my mind, actually.
Think.
The King Haku?
Before. It was an interview.
Brother Love was coming on.
It was an interview.
Right, came upstairs when Brother Love was out there.
A taped interview.
Give me a hint.
We laughed and remarked that it was the worst thing we'd ever seen.
I thought that was a Tito one. Who the hell else? It was an hour ago.
George the Animal fucking Steel.
Okay. I would not say that was the worst thing I ever saw. I would say it was the best thing I ever saw. George Steel cut a promo. He was plugging Mine, which is the George Steel doll. For those of you who have not seen George Steel, he had a bald head, which is very rare in the 1980s. He had a green tongue. He liked to eat the turnbuckle pads. And he was very, very hairy. And he was, for most of his career, a big, scary guy. And then, in the late 80s, he became a big, lovable guy. So they gave him a doll. It was a lump of gray fur with a bald head and a green tongue. I can't even say a bald head. It had a furry face and furry back of the head, but the top of its dome was bald. So they cut to George Steel. He has Mine. And he's standing there, and he struggles to think of a word. And I believe the first word he said was Mine. And he held up Mine. Seconds went by. He tried to think of another word and finally came up with workout. And several seconds went by. And he held up Mine and waved Mine's hand back and forth and said, goodbye. And the promo ended.
For those of you pissed off about PG WWE in 2010, go back and watch some primetime wrestling. Shit is downright hardcore today.
This is a pretty horrible show.
Let's play a song here very quickly. And then we're going to do a shout out. So here we go.
Each little snail here, you have to whale here. That's why it's hotter under the water. Yeah, we in luck here, down in the muck here, under the sea.
Yes. All right.
I don't know what he did to your voice, but that was awesome.
Somehow made me growl.
Each little snail here, you have to whale here. That's why it's hotter.
Yes.
The end of it is the best. The end of that scene. Here we go.
Yes.
Cliffs, everybody. All right, let me do this. We only got one shout out this week. If you sign up, you get a free shout-out. And a lot of you have signed up and not gotten your free shout-out, so you may as well send it in. Send it to me, brian@wrestlingobserver.com. Make sure it says shout-out in the subject line.
Or count-out.
Nope, it has to be shout-out. If it does not say shout-out in the subject line, it will not be shouted. Nor will it get out. So, make sure you do that. Brian, known jokester and formerly band member Chibi Diablo here. Just wanted to let everybody know I'll be gone for a while, as I am off to Afghanistan to fight the dirty insurgents and detect landmines and bombs with a handheld metal detector. If I don't die, save me a seat at Vegas next year.
Absolutely.
Huh. I did not expect that.
He has an important job to do.
Wow.
An important, vital, dangerous job.
Detect landmines and bombs with a handheld metal detector. I'm trying to think if I could think of a worse job on the earth than that.
It does suck.
Chibi, we're going to save you a seat next year in Vegas. I'm sorry to ban you. I don't know why I did that. I've long since forgotten. I'm a very a forgiving man. So if you want to return for... Actually, you're probably already back, quite frankly, because everybody just comes back under a new name when I ban them. But if you'd like to come back before you head off, let me know. And give us updates while you're over there. And maybe we'll even have you on the show. We had Stevie Cheesecake on the show several years ago, and I should find out what's going on with him as well. It's been a long time, so let us know, and we'll have you on. It's obviously an easy way to get a free shout-out is to serve in the military. I don't know if I mentioned that one. People get free shout-outs if they
spawn,
give birth, or adopt kittens is going to be the new one. So if you do any of those things or serve in the military, I'll give you a free shout-out. So Chibi, send them in every couple of weeks, and keep us updated with how you're doing. So that's a shout-out, everybody. That's all we've got. So let's wrap this bugger up with one last song, and then we'll bid goodbye. Adios. Here we go. Speaking of comedy and jokes, your birthday this year on November 4th, Friday?
Yeah.
I'm not going to be around that night. I'm going to Norm MacDonald. He's doing a comedy show.
Oh, really?
He's the best comedian in the whole world.
Well, why don't you take me for my birthday?
You want to go see Norm MacDonald?
No. He probably uses a lot of foul language, huh? Who is he? I never heard of him.
He's awesome! You've never heard of Norm MacDonald?
Okay, I'll look that up after I get off here.
There's this movie coming out.
Yes.
Title undetermined at this point.
Chairman of the board.
Oh, all right. Do something with that, you freak.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that.
Oh, Granny. I forgot to mention Granny's birthday is tomorrow, November 4th, which means that prior to Thursday's Brian and Vinny show, we are going to go to her birthday party at Big Daddy's in Woodinville. So if anybody wants to go, that's where the party's happening. 7 o'clock p.m., 7:30 p.m.
It's where the party
at. It's where the party is at. Granny's 81st birthday. So we'll go to the birthday party. We'll come back and report on that and Brian and Vinny as well. So anyway, that is it from here. We shall talk to you again after a while.
Adios.